Welcome back to More Than Tracy Turnblad, the podcast about fat representation and body size diversity in the arts. I'm Abby Rose Morris, and today I'm interviewing Tiffany T. Taylor, a Chicago-based actor, singer, and dancer. I had so much fun talking with Tiffany, and I cannot wait for you guys to hear this one. But first, let's talk about Shreks, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things Shrek can be. Let's talk about Shrek. Am I going to get sued for that? I don't. I think it's covered under parody law. Let's talk about Shrek. I've been wanting to do this since long before I started a podcast. Shrek is maybe my favorite fat representation in all of entertainment. I love Shrek. I love Shrek so much. Actually, I'm not sorry. I will never apologize for my love of Shrek. Oh my God, look how loud I'm talking. I'm like watching the meter go up so high because I love Shrek so much and I am not ashamed. Anyway, Shrek is maybe the only good fat representation for men. I think Shrek is the Tracy Turnblad of male fat representation. There I said it. And he's somehow also the Elphaba? Words cannot describe how much I love Shrek. A fucked up fact about me is that I had seen Shrek is Love, Shrek is Life before I had actually seen Shrek. But my high school friend group was really into it, so I thought it was funny. And then I watched Shrek and I was like, wait, what? This movie is good. This movie is so empowering. Like, I watched Shrek and felt empowered. And something that does piss me off about Shrek, though, is that he's like so often played by a thin guy in a fat suit. And it hurts me because I love Brian D'Arcy James, but did we have to? There are so many fat guys who would be wonderful Shreks. And it just makes me sad because with Fiona, I get it a little more. She's supposed to be this beautiful princess, and it's almost more of a statement to put her in a fat suit for the end to show that, like, she's still beautiful when she's fat. I think that it would lose some of its impact if she was fat from the beginning, to be honest, or at least it would lose some of its subliminal message about body size diversity, which I think is really important, and I don't want it to lose that message. So in that way, I'm okay with a thin person playing Fiona for most of the show. Shrek, though, Shrek gets to express the pain of being fat. You want to talk about gonna build me a wall? Like, you want to sit in one of my therapy sessions? You just go listen to Build Me a Wall, okay? Because I don't think that there's any other song in musical theater that's like so accurate to the fat experience than Shrek's. Who I'd be? Like, I'm sorry, did you rip that from my fucking diary? Like, excuse me? That song is the thesis of this podcast. It's like all the things that we as fat people are told we cannot do and we cannot be: a hero, a poet, a lover, a knight, like all of this stuff. And Shrek has, like, never even let himself want that. And then suddenly he does for 1 second, and then he sees it all get ripped away. And the way that his parents treat him in the beginning, it's a big, bright, beautiful world, but not for you. Are we talking about Shrek the musical or the movie? Both. If that wasn't clear, both. Anyway, his parents are, like, warning him, the world will reject you. The world will not accept your body as you are. If you cast Shrek as a, like, thin white man, what are you doing? Shrek needs to be at bare minimum two of those things, okay? And he has to be fat. He has to be fat. It's a plus if you cast a fat lesbian woman of color as Shrek, but bare minimum, he has to be fat. I love Shrek so much. It's not a freaky fetish thing. I want to be clear about that. But I love Shrek because I see myself in Shrek. I'm not going to lie. And that's okay because Shrek is a wonderful person with a heart of gold, and he gets a happy ending, and he is more morally decent than anybody else in that story. And I just love Shrek so much. Okay, you can listen to the interview now. I promise the Shrek segment is ogre now. If you want to cancel me for that, feel free. And now my interview with Tiffany T. Taylor. Hi, Tiffany. Thank you for joining us today.
Of course, I'm so excited.
Me too. So let's start by just going through your life and tell me your origin story in theater and musical theater.
For sure. I actually got started in theater really late. I didn't start singing until like junior year of high school, maybe. I was primarily a dancer. I really wanted to do commercial dance for a really long time. And I joined the drama club, and I also wanted to be an actor. I always knew that I wanted to act. I didn't know I wanted to do theater, though. I always wanted to do like TV, like Disney Channel and stuff.
Yeah.
And so when I went to high school, when I got to high school, I joined the drama club, and the musical, the first musical I did was Guys and Dolls. And that's kind of where I fell in love with it. I was like, wow, this is so much fun. And like I can dance and act at the same time. Like, maybe I'll do the singing eventually, but not right now. Yeah. And I didn't really learn how to sing until like junior year of high school. And that was also kind of when I decided to go to school for it. So I took it a lot more seriously once junior and senior year came around. And then I started auditioning for schools senior year. And then for college, I attended the Chicago College of Performing Arts at Roosevelt University, and I got a BFA in musical theater, and that was fun. And like, I graduated in 2019, so semi-recently, like, you know, like 2 years ago now, almost 2 years ago.
Exactly same.
Right. It's kind of crazy.
I know it. It feels like both yesterday and a million years ago.
I know. It really, truly does. Like, I mean, COVID really kind of put a dent in that. But
word.
yeah, for that year out of school, I was working a lot in Chicago. And then COVID happened. So, yeah.
Sounds about right.
For sure. It's kind of like the storyline for everybody.
Yeah. So when and how did you notice size starting to show up for you in your work as an artist?
I want to say high school. I want to say that it kind of started in high school. But that's mostly because I don't want to say I was like the biggest girl, but I was one of the bigger girls in the drama club. And everybody else, you know, like 14, 15, 16 year olds were tiny. So I was, you know, a little bit more womanly for my age. And it never really like, it never really came up that much. It did a little bit here and there, but like, I feel like in high school, I still had like, I the reality of it didn't really settle in until college, until I like decided to make it my career. And then I got to college, and honestly, I felt like a lot of my ability and like the way that people viewed me was only because of my size. Like I, you know, how I mentioned a little bit earlier, how I was a dancer. I wanted to move to LA for a commercial dance, and I was placed in the beginner level of all my dance classes in college simply because of my size. They did one singular like placement test the very beginning of our like BFA, like freshman year, and that was the tell all for the rest of the 4 years. And for TAP, I was able to move up a level and be like in the advanced section, which was great. But that was mostly because I like really had to work hard to prove myself.
Right.
And like, while I'm not like super technically trained, like it was kind of a bummer, you know, to know that like I wasn't getting the same fair treatment as everybody else. And like, there were a lot, you know, it was the same story for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, It was hard. It was definitely hard because they kind of pigeonholed me into something that I was not.
Yeah.
You know?
Can you expand on that?
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad that we're talking about this. So a lot of my teachers in college, like, you know, like for theater actors that do decide to get a degree, those 4 years or 2 years or, you know, however long you spend in college, or they can be some very crucial years before you start, you know, your career, especially if you're going into the market. Like I went to school in Chicago and I work in the Chicago market. So, you know, you're already establishing those connections, and like most of your teachers already have those connections for you and like stuff like that. But a lot of my teachers started comparing me to the older, like, Black women in the Chicago community, the Chicago theater community, while they are, like, insanely talented, like, pioneers and matriarchs of the Chicago theater community. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't feel good as a 19-year-old to be compared to a 55-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
Telling me, like, oh, you know, you need to, like, this is verbatim what my teacher said. He was like, you need to command the stage like Ife Butler. And Ife Butler is like, she's incredible. I am obsessed with her. And I do look up to her a lot. But she is like 30 years older than me. And she was like, at the time I was 19. And also a soprano, like a first soprano. And so like, it just, I don't know. It just doesn't feel very good. It didn't feel very good to hear that. And so like for a long time, I had to kind of live with that. And like, I questioned a lot. I was like, am I going to work at all when I graduate? Like, do I have to wait till I'm 40 years old to work? Like, do I have to wait until I can play Mama Morton or Mortimer F. Maybell? Like, do I really have to wait? Because I think that I do have the talent and I do have the capability to like succeed and do all these things.
Yeah.
And I confided in my like my voice teachers about it a lot. And like the second half of my BFA, they kind of started seeing me as more than that because they knew like she's working her butt off. Like she's working so hard. Maybe we were wrong. Yes, you were. Maybe we were wrong. And like I had the opportunity to like to show them, you know, and like they started calling me back for things that were a little more non-traditional. I don't really like to use that word, but
yeah, it's a gross word.
Yeah, it's kind of,
it's gross because it means racist and fatphobic and classist and ableist.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's like, what's traditional like, then?
It's the way that we say all of those things at once.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a gross word. Yeah. Like you said, I don't like it. But yeah, like, I don't know. I started working outside of school my senior year. I booked a couple shows outside of school and they were like, oh, we gotta be able to claim her. So we gotta give her something big. So I played Cinderella and Into the Woods my last semester of school and it was really fun. And then they used my photo. They used my photo in the pamphlet
in the
next
Cinderella
year.
Dress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I was like, okay. I don't really want to be like the face of this conservatory, but
right.
Go ahead and plaster my face on the pamphlets if you want, I guess. Go off, you know.
Yeah. So since you graduated, have you found the community to treat it better or differently?
Yeah. I want to say yes and no. I don't know. I feel like I have been able to kind of combat the stereotypes a little bit. I've let a lot of comments slide off my back from directors and actors alike. They've said a lot of weirdly like backhanded things and like, I don't know. I've gotten like laughed at in my face when I say like, oh, I'm going for that role or I got called back for that role as well. But I feel like mostly.
It's gross.
Yeah, I know, right? I've dealt with that like my entire career.
Yeah.
I'm sure you also have, and like, you know, a lot of people in our shoes probably have as well. Because, you know, we want to be seen for more than our body. That's the whole point. But, I have a thick skin when it comes to that. And part of me is like, should I really, or should I?
Right. When do you?
Yeah. Should I say something? Like,
yeah, but like, when do you know when that's appropriate and when they're going to respond well and when they're going to take it into account, or when they're going to nod their heads and then keep doing the same thing?
Right. I feel like I just have an issue kind of like standing up for myself in general. I don't know. It's just like a thing.
Yeah.
It's just a thing.
It's hard. It's like so hard.
It is. And especially when like in our career, like you have to be so respectful and like,
yeah,
I'm glad that lately, like as of late, more people have been a little bit more vocal. And I think with the time off that we were given because of COVID, like a lot of people are coming to their senses a little bit.
Yeah.
And it also, I mean, like, With the whole size thing, I have to add a whole nother layer is that I'm black.
Right.
I mean, I'm half black. I'm half black and half Filipino. But, you know, it's a lot of that, too. Like, a lot of backhanded stuff. A lot of, like, oh, like, you got that because they needed to fill a quota. Like, they had to do all that kind of stuff. And, like, you know, the quota thing also comes into play with the size thing. Like, oh, you were the big dancer in the ensemble. Like,
right. Something that keeps coming up on this podcast is that when you're like, oh, we have one.
Yes.
Usually it's like, there can only be one. Who's going to be that one? You know what I mean? Like, it breeds this competition.
Exactly.
And it's like, who's going to be the one fat girl, the one black girl?
Right.
And the other one's out of a job.
Exactly. It's like there's only room for the one. It's like, you might as well throw that on the breakdown, the one fat dancer or the fat ensemble member. You know, it's like, why? Like, why do we have to be the focal point? Why do we have to be the representation? Like, yes, it's so important for us to be on that stage, but like, why does it have to be a big thing? Like, why does it have to be such a big social justice move that they put a big girl in the ensemble or a big girl in a non-traditional role? Like, why does it have to be that big of a deal?
Right.
If I'm talented, that's what matters. Why aren't you concentrating on that, you know?
Yeah. So with being black and Filipino, I'm wondering how that's showed up, like intersecting with size for you.
Yeah, I feel like a lot, you know, like it goes back to the thing in college. This is kind of funny. It's kind of funny and also kind of traumatic. When I was in school, there were 7 women of color. 7 black women in my class. I believe there were, maybe I'm wrong. Well, in my graduating class, yes. So,
gotcha.
You know, we lost a lot of people along the way, as conservatories
as
usually
you do.
Yes, exactly.
That's something they do not tell you before you get there.
Right. You're going to drop like flies.
Yep.
But, yeah, at the end, like, you know, at the end of it, there was 7. And throughout all 4 years of the conservatory, every single teacher had called me by one of the other 6 women's names. And like with their chest, like, like calling me by a completely different name. Like, why? Like, they were so confident in calling me a different name. Like, they didn't even know my name. And it was so bad. It was so bad to a point where after I graduated college, I booked my very first equity gig, and it was a like supporting role at one of the bigger equity theaters here in Chicago. And one of my teachers saw me in public and called me by the wrong name.
Oh my God.
Like, and did not correct themselves. And I didn't feel like correcting them because I was like so embarrassed for them.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh yeah, aren't you in Greece, Tiffany? No, not Tiffany. They called me a different name. They were like, aren't you in Greece? And I was like, okay, so if you didn't even call me by the right name in the first place, like, how did you know that I was in that show?
You were in Greece.
Yeah, I was in Greece. Yeah. Like, did you just assume that maybe that person was in Greece? Or like,
wow,
why do you not know who I am? I went to your institution for 4 years, and you can tell the difference between every single white person, every right. single white person at that school. Like, maybe a slip up here and there, but like the amount that I was called, like, I can probably count on like my two hands the amount of times I was called by my own name. Like,
that's insane.
I know. And these are the people that are educating me. Like, these are the people that,
yeah, it's I'm their job to trust know you.
In. Yes, it's their job. Like, you gave me assignments tailored to me. Like, how am I supposed right. to, how am I supposed to trust?
How can you trust them to give you what you're going to need out of your education if they don't even know who you are?
Exactly. That's exactly yeah. the point. And like, I didn't really notice that until later in the, uh-huh. the process. I was like, they don't know who I am. Like, and it is just so insane. There were seven of us. There were literally yeah. seven of us, and you couldn't learn our names. They really couldn't tell the difference. And every single one of us knew and felt it, because at one point they were called my name. Like, everybody yeah. was called Tiffany. Like, how am I supposed to believe that I'm an individual achieving a higher education if I'm just yeah. here to fill a quota? Or like, if you're not even going to take the time to get to know me and like, know who I am?
Not even know who you are. Just know your name.
Just like, know that's my the bare name. Minimum. You're casting me. You know, I come yeah. in here every semester and I audition for you. Like, am I really just a face in the crowd to you? Like, that does not feel right. very good. It didn't feel very good.
God.
Yeah.
No kidding. It's such a common microaggression.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think fat people experience it maybe on like a lower level, because I mm-hmm. definitely have been mixed up for the one other fat girl there.
Yeah, definitely. Or
someone's mistaken me for someone, or like, oh, you look just like this person, and then the only thing we have in common is that we're both plus size.
Oh my goodness. That has happened to me so many times. Like, they'll compare me to like so many people. Like, the one of my biggest pet peeves is when people like, oh my goodness, okay, that like gets me angry. So like, it really gets me angry. People from every walk of life, like actors, regular people, everybody and their mother tells me that I look like Lizzo, and I don't look like Lizzo. The only thing that I have in common with Lizzo is that we're both fat and black. Like, we don't look alike. And I don't lose sleep over it. I love her. I love her so much. I really, really do. And I think she's gorgeous and incredible in every way. But like, that just
yes,
makes
facts,
me...
but that doesn't make it okay no, or hurt any
that
less.
That doesn't yeah. make... It doesn't make me feel... Like, it doesn't make me feel any better to know that you're literally only seeing me for my fatness and my blackness. Like...
Yes.
I don't look like her. So...
Yeah.
You know?
It's like... It's the feeling of being unseen.
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that the only people that tell me that are white people.
Right.
Yeah. It's mostly, like, able-bodied white people, too. Like, they're not able-bodied, but you know what I mean. Like, straight-sized people.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, you know, Tiffany, you look just like Lizzo. You're exactly like her. And I'm like, oh, okay. And it kind of, like, makes me go red in the face a little bit. I'm like, what besides me being fat makes me look like Lizzo, you know?
Right. I don't know. It's like one of those things where it happens and you're like, oh, I've just learned something about you.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And like, it's like every little thing that I do, I'm like, if I move a certain way, if I wear my hair a certain way, if I like mm-hmm. do my makeup a certain way, oh my God, you're Lizzo. You're literally Lizzo.
Oh.
You look just like her. And I'm like, oh my God.
She's just the first fat black woman you've ever seen be in the media.
I know. And I'm like, you know, I understand that like not very many people have had the luxury of being around people like me, like, or who look like me. So like,
that's true,
yes,
yeah.
of course, they're
especially
gonna,
in theater.
Yes. Especially in theater. They're mm-hmm. gonna, you know, they're immediately gonna compare me. They're gonna compare me to whoever they can think of. And
right.
if that's Lizzo, I mean, so be it. I, like, you know, like I said before, like, I take it with a grain of salt. I usually let it just kind of like roll off my back, but it is a big pet peeve of mine. I cannot lie.
Yeah. And in performing spaces, we do so much comparison. Like, we do, in my opinion, deeply unnecessary level of comparing ourselves to famous people, to each other, to, you know, various actors.
I totally agree with you there. Like, there's just way too much comparison. And I think that's the thing, like, that I've noticed a lot with theater is that, like, we're all playing these very similar, you know, like, each role in theater, like, it's not necessarily individual to you, like, in the way that film is. Like, you have this role, and right. There's probably no one else that is ever going to play this role. But,
yeah, and I'd say that's hyper-emphasized in musical theater, where it's just a bit more, you know, narrower tropes and more,
yes,
like, strictly
exactly.
formatted.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm, definitely. And it's like, there's just so much room for comparison. And it's like, you know, we all want to stand out and we all want to be individual. That's why we're all doing this career, because we all have the confidence in ourselves to have a lengthy, awesome acting career.
Or right. singing and we career. All want to, like, share ourselves.
Yes.
And that's the whole point of, like, all of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason theater, especially musical theater, falls into those tropes is because we're looking for, like, what tracks on Broadway could I play?
Right.
Like, and they tend to cast actors who always look similar.
Yeah.
Like, a role I've always wanted to play is Logan Schwartz and Grubinier from the 20th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Amazing.
And when I saw it, she was blonde and thin.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, or, you know what, I might have actually seen a brunette actress. But whatever, she was thin. So I was like, I can never play that role.
Right.
But, like, there's nothing about that character that needs to be thin.
No.
Nothing at all.
And
it makes
most,
no sense.
Most roles in musical theater are not like that. And when they specify size, it's always like Tracy Turnblad, or like,
oh yeah,
you know, like,
it's like about
Effie White, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That, like, where it's a character thing, and it's like a
right.
thing that they're like Jan in Grease. Like, that's what played. Mm-hmm. I just played her. I played her twice now.
Right.
And I guess, I mean,
let's talk about
I guess we can go ahead and talk about that. But
what was that experience like?
Honestly, I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was my first Equity show, and it was at an incredible theater. I really loved working. I loved working at that theater, and nobody, like, especially on the production team, like, even down to the costuming, like, I was really, really, really scared for the costuming.
Yeah.
Because, you know, being used to working in non-Equity theater, they're like, you know, can you, like, bring your own thing? And, like, oh, yeah, we're going to have to keep altering this. Like, this is not going to fit. We have to find something else. Like, being the last person to be costumed every single time didn't feel very good.
Yeah.
But they did not make me feel that way at all.
Ugh.
They had stuff, like, ordered for me. Like, they didn't make it seem like a big issue. And also, you know, it's a huge multi-million-dollar Equity theater. Of course they have the funds to, like, do that stuff. And so it felt really good to, like, go in there, like, for my very first costume fitting before rehearsals had even started, and, like, mm-hmm. fit everything. Like, that was euphoric to me.
Like, they take your measurements and then they use them?
And they use them?
That's amazing.
Like, what? I was like, oh my goodness, this is something that I've never experienced in my life. So it was really, really cool. And I felt so, like, comfortable and confident in every costume that I had in that show. I was also the youngest girl in the show, and I was 22 at the time. And so, you know, with that, like, it's my first Equity show. I'm playing a supporting role. Like, I was really, really nervous, of course. But everybody on the production team made me feel super comfortable. And, like, honestly, I don't really think size ever came into the conversation with the production team, though. That's what I'll say.
Right.
And, like, they never made me feel uncomfortable. They never made, like, yes, like, on paper, in the text, Jan is like the bigger, the chunky girl, whatever she loves to eat. Cool.
That's why I asked this question.
Yes,
but it's so great
yes.
that you had a good experience playing a character like that. Like, that gives me hope.
Yeah, I know. And, like, the first time I played the role, can't say that was.
Oh,
the
so
case.
That was your second time. Was the good
yeah?
Experience.
This is my second
got
time.
It,
my
got
first
it.
Time playing it was in 2015, the summer after I graduated high school. And it was different. But, yeah, they never, like, made me feel any type of way. Like, I felt like my talent and everything, like it was enough to just kind of show up and show out. And like, I was never really reduced to just my size, which was, I was really, you know, I was afraid playing a character like that.
That's so great. Yeah. I love hearing about good experiences on this podcast, because we spend a lot of time talking, talking about you know, horror stories and the very worst of the worst. So this was, it's great to hear about that.
Yeah, of course. I'm glad that I got to share good and bad things, because, you know, like, it's our art.
It's a mixed bag.
You know, we love to do it, and it's good. Yeah. It was really fun. And, I felt like I could do anything at that point. I was like, yeah, I feel great. And I did have to eat a lot. That's the issue.
You had to eat on stage.
Yeah, I had to eat on stage, and I have really, really bad acid reflux.
Oh, that's awful.
And this happened both the first and second time that I played it. I had to eat like microscopic bites in order to get through the show, because like, she's supposed to eat an entire Twinkie, and I, nope. Not 8 times a week, baby. I cannot eat 8 Twinkies.
Oh, my God. No kidding.
I would vomit. No, I ended up eating like a bite of everyone.
It's so funny because like, that's the stereotype. But when it comes time, I had to squirt whipped cream into my mouth on stage one time.
No.
And I'm lactose intolerant. Oh, and I was like, this isn't happening. And they got me soy whipped cream, which was really lovely, and I didn't think they were going to be able to find it. But this is before it was like super cool to be vegan, and there was a lot of different like
super accessible
almond milk and coconut milk whipped creams that they like have at your local corner store. Like, this was before all that. They had to like find a special soy one, and it was disgusting.
Oh my goodness.
And every night I like almost gagged, and I would like run backstage and spit it into the garbage.
No.
But, you know, I wasn't like farting on stage, so
for the art. It's for the art, you know. It's definitely for the art.
Yep.
But that's good. Yeah, I mean, eating on stage is a whole nother thing. It's like a fear of mine. I'm like, oh my God, am I gonna be seen as like a pig?
Yeah,
because it's so easy to just like, you know, when you see a fat person eating, you're like, oh my God, like, that's what.
And fat people eating is like the joke so much of the time.
Yeah, it's the joke.
Certainly was in the show that I'm talking about. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. What show was it?
It was James and the Giant Peach.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've never seen that show.
It was like a, it was like a youth theater too. So
okay.
Like,
the musical, the Patrick and Paul one?
Yes, the musical, yeah.
Wow.
And I was obviously Aunt Sponge, the fat aunt.
Oh,
so.
No.
It's actually my most overt fat role to date. And
really?
I was, it was a really interesting experience because I was, you know, I just come off my first year of BFA training, and I was like, I'm going to bring such depth to the role of Aunt Sponge with my Uta Hagen nine questions. And then I got there, and you know, the whole role was just like, fall over, now eat whipped cream on stage, now be gross, be mean, be fat.
Which is
like really just in the role doll. Like, that's the fault of no director and no writer.
It's really
just,
is.
It's in the original text.
They love the camp of it. They love that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I got so much praise for that role, which I had always, like, really struggled with, but it was just a really interesting experience to be getting, like, all this praise when I felt like I was doing nothing and was unable to bring anything that I had learned in my first year of school to the role.
Right, right, and, like, I feel like that's the thing with, like, BFA programs is that we go so hard in the curriculum, and, like, we study these really, really intricate, like, these intricate like ways of acting, like Meisner and Stanislavski and stuff, and like, how am I going to bring this to playing Jan in Greece? Like, like, what are the questions I'm going
to
ask?
What
rituals do they do? Like, no, I'm not going to do ritual work on Greece. Come on.
So this was a really big digression, but I want to go back to college
yeah.
and talk about your vocal type and how
For sure.
mentioned that you felt that was not seen or was overlooked.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you bring this up because this is something that still to this day is just like kind of a nuisance. I'm a soprano one. I am a very high, I don't want to like say like coloratura, but I do like, my really strong suit's like above staff.
Yeah.
I don't know so much anymore, though, because of COVID, because, like, I haven't been in practice. I can't lie. Sorry.
Right.
But for college, I really focused on my soprano and building that. And by the end of my 4 years, I felt very, very strong in that. And, like, showcase, I sang a very golden age soprano song. And it, you know, ended up doing very well.
What song?
I sing Yes, My Heart from Carnival. And it's a cute little song. It was very sweet, very, very sweet song, very fun. I loved working on it. And that's, you know, that's what they told us, like, with Senior Showcase, like, go into it with something that you're going to love because you're going to get sick of it for sure.
Right.
but people really didn't believe that I was a soprano until they saw and heard me. And I was like, why do I have to constantly shove it in your face? Like, I felt like I was just, like, telling everyone, like, yeah, I'm a soprano, I'm a soprano, I'm a soprano. And, like, and especially, like, you know, that year, that one semester for auditions that I, that, you know, Into the Woods was, and all these girls were getting called back for Cinderella and Rapunzel. And everybody that got called back for Cinderella also got called back for Rapunzel. And so, like, it was me and, like, all these white girls. I was like, there's no fucking way I'm getting this. Oops, I'm sorry, I swore.
But you did.
but I did. And I don't know. People got so angry, I think. Yeah. And, like, and people were like, I mean, not that anybody, like, not that I know anybody that actually said this, but I really, I just feel like there was someone that was like, oh, she only got that because she's Tiffany, and she only got that because they wanted to be non-traditional and they wanted to make a statement with their casting.
Right.
Like, oh yeah, Tiffany's a senior, of course she's going to get that role. Like, blah, blah, blah. She basically asked for that role. And, like, not that I know anybody asked for that, but, like, what, like, why did it take that? Once I did the show, like, once I did the show, that's when people were like, oh, okay, okay, I'll be quiet now. Like, of course. Once they saw me, once like I proved myself, like, why did I have to work so hard to prove myself, you know?
Right.
And, like, the teachers got to know me. The teachers, I can't say that, like, there was one teacher that, like, really let me, like, soar as a soprano, like, consistently assigned me soprano songs and soprano roles and soprano stuff because she put her faith in me and, like, that's what she saw me in and stuff, and that made me, you know, like, that's what I was doing. And, you know, like, I was doing a lot of ingenue stuff.
Right.
And I hate that word. I hate the ingenue type.
That's another word that just, like, carries all these white thin connotations.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Because, like, you have people, like, you know, I was singing so many, like, Barbara Cook songs, Mary and the Librarian, like, all that kind of stuff.
That.
I know. I know. And, like, I would love to play Marion one day. That would be an incredible role. Like, I love those songs, and I do love, like, part of me loves Golden Age, you know, as a soprano.
Absolutely.
Like, you kind of have to. But yeah, like, for people, it was just so hard for them to believe that a fat black girl could be anything besides, like, and I'm telling you, like, no, I can't. I'm not only Effie White. I'm not only Mom Morton. And, like, whenever I would tell people, like, these songs, they'd be like, oh, really, Tiffany? Like, you're doing that? Although I would have to say, like, my class, they were pretty supportive of me.
Yeah.
I'd say, like, most of my class, at least, like, the like 20 people in the BFA MT class of 2019.
Yes.
They're pretty supportive of me. So, like,
yeah,
I felt very, you know, I felt supported throughout, you know, class and everything. But yeah, it's just like there was so much doubt that I had to overcome, and it was just not really fair, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
it's just this assumption too, like, the voice types, it's so weird. It's like they think if you're not traditionally pretty, you can't sing pretty.
Right.
But, like,
right.
Why? But also, like, I think our definition of pretty has changed, or at least is changing.
I think so,
and
too.
And so then, like, why is theater still stuck on this? You can only sing pretty if you are you know,
quote unquote pretty,
quote unquote traditional,
quote unquote, like thin white person,
able-bodied,
able-bodied person, most
and
likely
like
tall.
Dainty and pretty and
dainty. Yes, non- that's the key.
How do I put this? Non-threatening, but like demure.
Right.
But like that kind of, but it's, that makes me so mad because a lot of these ingenues have so much fire in them and I wish that that was played more.
Yes. There's more depth. There's more depth. And that's like, that was, you know, that was kind of my, my mission in college was to kind of redefine what ingenue was because I was given, I was given the opportunity to study and like really, really get to know these characters that I was playing like in class. The only role I ever played at that school was Cinderella. That was the only role. Mm-hmm. And every other show I was in the ensemble.
Well, ensemble, yeah.
So yeah, that was not really fun. But even at that, like all every other semester, every other semester I was getting called back for the old women. Old women, right. And that's the thing in BFA programs, or just like theater school in general. Any theater school, regardless of whether it's BFA, like it could be community college, even. Like, if you are a person with a womanly figure, you're mom.
Yeah,
immediately, mom, old woman. That's it. That's all you can play. Because all these little
you got
dainty,
boobs, you got kids.
Yes, you got boobs, you got kids. That's exactly the thing. And it's like, why is it that like because I'm bigger and like. You know, I'm a big black woman. Like, I have all of a sudden, like, you can totally see me being a 40-year-old chain smoker. You know, like, why is it so easy for you? And like,
right, that's believable, even though it's not believable to believe a 22-year-old could play a 22-year-old on stage.
I know. It's just like so annoying. And when
so weird these lines we have drawn, because like what we find believable is so narrow, and when you look from out from outside, it's absurd.
Right. Absolutely. It's like you're in a theater watching people sing in a real life. Like no one is going to break into song. You already have to suspend your disbelief. You're at a musical. Right. Like. It's not realistic.
We can only accept it this one way. Otherwise, it ruins our ability to believe they're singing in the middle of a cornfield.
Right.
Oh, shit. Oh, my fucking God.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. I just literally broke this chair.
Oh, my God.
No.
What an exciting episode.
So here's what happened.
Is. Oh, goodness.
I am sitting in this chair. This is an incredible podcast moment.
Oh my God.
I don't know if we'll edit this
so
out or
glad.
Not. Because if you're listening to this and you don't know, every fat person's nightmare is breaking a chair in public.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
What happened was my headphones, I put my headphones down on the chair and then I sat on them and they went through this like, this chair is made of this like wicker mesh thing. So it's not very sturdy. And I actually... The first time I sat in it, was afraid it wouldn't hold me, but it's been doing fine so far
until
I sat the headphones
moment.
Right through it.
Oh, no.
But that happened.
What a historic moment of this podcast. Oh, my God.
It's incredibly candid, incredibly authentic.
It's vulnerable. That's what it is.
I feel like I can't edit it out now.
No, you got to keep it in. Yeah. Got to keep it in. Got to entertain.
Yep. Oh, my God. Which is so funny because my biggest James and the Giant Peach story actually is that I broke a chair on stage. And everybody started laughing. I can't believe I didn't mention that. But yeah, we were supposed to sit in these like rickety kind of lawn chairs or like the fold-up ones that you take camping. And my fellow aunt sat down like half a beat too early. So I threw myself into that chair so I could land at the same time as her and we could do it at the same time together. And the chair broke and the entire cast broke. And the entire audience laughed for like literally probably 5 minutes.
No. Oh my God. I don't know what I'd do.
Yeah, that was that's my biggest fat theater horror story.
Oh my God.
Now everyone who's listening to this knows I carry that trauma.
The pure vulnerability, it's just inspiring to me. I don't know if I've ever done anything like that. Let me think.
Yeah.
I ever had a fat theater moment?
I mean, a fat theater moment is just someone being like, you should play Tracy Turnblad, or like casting you as a mom. Like, that's a fat theater moment.
Yes. Like, people literally tell me that I'd be a great Tracy Turnblad. I'm black. have you seen Hairspray? Because I don't think that would really work.
Multiple people have told you this. That's
multiple
insane.
People, including my own mother. Sorry, mom.
That is so funny.
I know. But also, and it's like, for her, it's like kind of funny. It's kind of funny, but
it's
everyone else.
It's like funny, hey. But it's also tragic irony.
I know, right?
Yeah. I'm like, because like in what? A show that's about civil rights,
literally about black or white,
literally hinges on having people of different races
the
in
entire
it.
Point yes no, yeah. I'm sorry I can't play that role sorry to break your heart.
I mean, I've heard horror stories about the all-white productions of Hairspray
oh,
before
god yeah they have like different colored shirts. They're like,
oh my god.
Or oh Uptown god. Downtown, that's what I heard. Yeah. Is another one. Oh, like the, why would you do that show if you don't have
Uptown
black people
and downtown.
Why would you do that show if you don't
how
have black
do you change
people?
The lyrics, is it like downtown day once a month? That's very
downtown,
upsetting.
Downtown
once a month we have our downtown
day. And like, what about Run and Tell That? Like, how can you perform Run and Tell That without black people? I'd really like to know. The blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice.
Oh my god.
Where are you getting that? Who is
the more downtown the berry?
Downtown, the more downtown, the better the, I don't know,
clown frown
clown
sound.
I have no idea. That's, but isn't that like in a, that's not even a good concept. Hairspray no. without black people is just not Hairspray.
It's
not
a
show. Not a concept. It should not be. It should not even be a thought. It shouldn't exist. I don't know. I feel like a lot of things changed. I don't know. I don't know about you. Like, I don't know what you think, but like the whole face of theater and like representation and like just like political correctness in theater changed with Trump's presidency. I feel like more people were like, oh, this is not okay. Like, maybe we shouldn't yeah. cast white people in the Heights, and maybe we shouldn't cast, like, you know, like we should actually, I feel that's just kind of how, like, or, you know, it might've been that I was going through my really formative years during that, those yeah. 4 years. But like, I don't know. I think, I really do think like my last show I did in high school was Thoroughly Modern Millie, which is just a highly problematic show.
Oh yeah.
Like blatant yellow face, and everybody was doing that show.
Oh, yeah.
Till like maybe 2015, 2016, and then all of a sudden no one did it anymore. Like, oh,
then it was like a switch
show.
Was slipped. Mm-hmm. So for me, I noticed that too, but I thought it was because I left my extremely white home state and went to school in Philadelphia, which
right.
was much more diverse.
Right.
And like for the first time in my life, I was like actually acting around a significant number of people of color, although like definitely white folks were still the majority because mm-hmm. that's that be theater. But
right, yeah, definitely.
Like it, I was just like, oh, I'm like around more people. I'm in the city. Like I'm becoming more aware because that's what college is for.
Right.
So I thought that's what was happening. But what you said makes
yeah.
more sense.
No, but I also went through the same thing, sort of. I mean, I grew up in a very conservative area, and so
yeah.
like of Illinois, and then I moved like 45 miles north to Chicago, which is, you know, the opposite. And
right.
so maybe just being exposed to more of that, like maybe that changed something. But like, even at that, like my first year of BFA,
yeah.
like we had white people singing stuff from In the Heights. We had like, just like not appropriate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really think it came to light with Trump and
that's
all that kind of stuff,
so
which is so
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right?
But I guess makes sense that like a glaring light was shown on all of this.
Yeah, for sure.
And suddenly people stop saying, we're gonna sit back and take this is how things are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think I want to say, like, I haven't been exposed to the Chicago theater community enough. Like, there are some really, really, you know, I was able to work with a lot of people who have been doing this for years and, like, know everybody and anybody in this whole town. Like, I don't think I'm at that level yet to really say anything, but, like, from what I noticed, it's kind of like, I don't know. I would like them to push a little bit more for,
yeah,
some more, like, representation, but, like, just thinking out of the box, you know, because all the people that attend these big equity houses and these big Chicago shows are old white people, and, you know, they want to see the book definition of whatever each show is, you know, like, and that's what they're paying for, you know, like, that's why people are very afraid to veer from tradition.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah,
not great, but I feel like people are getting more open, becoming more open-minded.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch it too, especially with these older folks who are, you know, the lifeblood of theater, and they're all the patrons and subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
I got to work at, in like front of housey kind of things, mm-hmm, for two different theaters that are kind of pushing the envelope a little bit for that, but still have a very like older white subscriber base.
Right.
And people are in both camps. Like, some people get more staunchly set in their ways when they're challenged, and then some people shift.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. And I think that's just kind of like how they are in general. Like,
yeah,
whether it be what they pay for, or whether it be, you know, politics, or literally anything, I feel like they're
all
kind
goes hand in hand.
Yeah, it just goes hand in hand, truly. And it's like, you know, each individual person and their own beliefs and their own, like, people don't like to be called out. They don't like to feel uncomfortable. And when,
yeah,
you know, theaters do push the envelope a little bit more, and they force patrons to be uncomfortable in order to make change, and like maybe realize, oh, maybe like what I'm doing is not amazing. Like, maybe the way I think is kind of backwards. And that's what, you know, that's what we try to do as creators and theater makers. And
yeah,
you, with theater specifically, like, we try so hard to like make them feel something at the end, like have them walk out of the theater with not necessarily like a changed person, because, you know, very rarely do you have the opportunity to do that, but like, you want to make them leave with something in mind.
Yeah,
you know, something to think about. And so with that, like, yeah, maybe you should think about, like, that. Yeah.
Right.
I feel like a lot of stuff in Chicago did that, too. But
yeah. All right. So let's talk about the representations you saw of fat bodies as you were growing up.
For sure.
What were the ones that stood out to you that you remember taught you something about fatness?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I'd say, like, Hairspray, huge.
Yeah,
that was it. Funny thing about Hairspray, when like me and my mom were moving, we didn't have cable for a little bit because we were like, we're moving, and Hairspray was the only DVD that I had at the time, so I swear I know every word of that entire movie, and so like that movie, you know, holds it. To each their own, but that movie was one of the best movie musicals ever made, I think.
I completely agree.
So good.
There's
so
a reason that's why we named this podcast after it.
Right,
we
yes.
being me, myself, and I.
More than Tracy Turnblad. Exactly. Like, I really loved that. I think Nikki Blonsky played Tracy so well. She's just like,
yeah,
she was a really, really good choice for that role. Let me think. I mean, Effie and Dreamgirls is another one. But that was a little bit later in my life, I guess. I'm thinking, what else? What other ones like really stick out to me? I don't know. I feel like I didn't really realize it until like high school. High school was where I kind of like put myself in that little boat a little bit more. Like, when I was younger, I was a really skinny child. So I didn't really fit into that, like, I wasn't really looking for that at the time, but like when I was in high school, I kind of tried to look for more people that looked like me. I'd say, like, you know, like Rebel Wilson in Pitch Perfect,
good, which, or bad.
Looking back on it now, I'm like, ooh, that is problematic, the way that they made her play that. I feel like I started watching a lot of Queen Latifah stuff at that time, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Queen Latifah, I love her. She's definitely a role model of mine. She's freaking awesome.
Trailblazer.
And she, yeah, she's definitely a trailblazer in, like, the plus size community. And, like,
for sure.
She never let it define her, I don't think. And I think she's really, really awesome. I really, I love her so much.
I remember you mentioning Disney Channel.
Oh, yeah. My biggest role model my entire life. I think you already know what I'm going to say. Raven Simone.
Oh my gosh, yes.
She was my biggest role model growing up ever. And like...
Also Cheetah Girls with the dancing.
Oh my goodness, yes. Cheetah Girls, yeah. Like she's an actress, singer, dancer. Everything that I wanted to be. She is just so... And she was so steadfast. That one episode of That's So Raven where like they took her face and put it on a really skinny model's body. She's like, that's not my body. That was the first time I was like, people do that? What? People do that? And like, Raven was never like plus size. You know, I personally don't think I wouldn't have considered her plus size, but she did have a womanly figure. She was like more in the middle, compared to everybody else, like on that channel, at least from what I've seen. But like, I feel like, yeah, looking back on it now, I think I see it on Twitter all the time. Like sometimes they dressed her really badly. Like they,
yeah.
Especially when like towards Disney the channel. End of the show. Yeah. Right. The channel.
Those outfits on everybody.
Disgusting. Right. Like what kind of statement are they trying to make? Cause it's really
The feathers, the sequins.
The feathers. It's
I was
gross.
So into it as a child.
I know I was too. And I like tried to dress like that.
Oh yeah. Why? We all did.
I looked like a clown. But yeah, towards the end of the show when she did get like a little bit bigger, like they really, really fucked her up. Like they did not let her wear nice things. But yeah, no, I think she was kind of like the first person that I looked at and I was like, wow, like not everyone on TV is skinny and white.
Yeah.
You know? So she was a huge role model for me. Yeah, I think I'm sure there's more. Like I can't really think of them right now. I think it's changing now too.
It definitely is. I'm going to have like a 5-year-old on this podcast to see what they would say.
Like, what do you think? They're like, I love Lizzo. And I love like, I don't know who else. But yeah, no, I think it's changing. I think it's changing. I think it's really cool. And I don't know. With all the like craziness and like all this stuff that like TikTok. TikTok is a huge It's like Tumblr 2.0. That's what people are saying. Like, I feel like I learn a lot of stuff from TikTok. Like, I learn a lot about everything, but they can be really, 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 really mean on there to people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, really mean. Like, the generation below us is, they're pretty brutal. They're mean.
That's true. So, I don't think that anti-fat bias is going away.
No, definitely not. Because
unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely not.
But the counter movement is growing, which is good.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I agree. And, you know, sadly, like, skinny, white, Eurocentric features are and will always be the standard and the pinnacle of fashion and like, media and all that stuff. Like, that's, you know, that's inevitable and... As much like I hopefully we will change it one day. Let's put that out there.
Yeah.
You know, manifest it. We're gonna manifest it that it's gonna change and you know, like all that. But yeah, when you veer from that, it's like, oh, you're so confident. Like, I wish I had your confidence. What kind of compliment is that?
I know. Like,
so many people tell me that.
And it's also like, if you're not performatively like out there, then people think you're not confident.
Right. I do have a story about that actually. So,
let's hear it.
Okay. So I posted a TikTok one time. This was back like the day before Thanksgiving. I posted a TikTok and, there's this stitch feature where you can like take a couple seconds of somebody's video and then like add it to your own. So a lot of people will ask a question like, what's a YouTube memory that you will never forget? And then they like put it, and then like a bunch of people will put their own, and they'll put those 5 seconds and then put their own, you know, thing. And so I made one, and it opened up just this can of worms I was not prepared for. Mine was about, it was, what's the most fucked up thing that your parents said to you as a kid that is still with you today? And I didn't think anyone was going to see it. I think I had like maybe 15,000 followers at the time. Cause I was like, I like had done a couple like voiceover things that like blew up, but it wasn't anything where I was like, wow, like you have, like you're great, you're a creator. No, it was just like garnered a couple thousand. Like it's not that big of a deal. But, I told a story about how when I was a kid, growing up, I was like always a little bit more on the heavier side. I know I did say that I was like a skinny kid back then, but like come like, you know, middle school, I was kind of, I was getting a womanly figure. I definitely was curvier rather than like fat. And I think I like, you know, once high school came around, I was like fatter. My mom would always be like, she told me, like, she was like naming all the girls in my class, like all of them, they're going to have to start worrying about boys, but I'm really glad that you're fat so you don't have to worry about that. And then like people would comment on her Facebook, like she would post photos of me on Facebook, and then like all her friends and stuff, they'd be like, you know, Tiffany's really pretty, but she's fat. Like she needs to do something about that. And she'd be like, well, you know, it's an advantage to me at her age that she's fat because I don't have to worry about anything. And so, yeah, it sucked, but it's something that I've, you know, like I've unpacked it in therapy. I've talked about it and I'm very comfortable with it. I'm very comfortable talking about it, which is why I made the TikTok. And at the end of the TikTok, I had like 4 seconds left. So I was just like, I'm just going to say whatever I want to say. So I said, I'm 23 years old now. I live by myself and I still think that no man will ever love me because of it. And I think that was a little bit dramatic. I think it was a little bit dramatic, but at the same time, didn't think that anybody would see it. And overnight it got 1 million views.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I was not prepared for that. And it just kept blowing up and blowing up and blowing up. And then people, you know, people stitched it, but then like a lot of people were like flooding it with like, oh my God, like your mom's horrible for saying that. Or like, you know, you're so beautiful. Don't let anyone ever tell you different. Like, I hope you see that in yourself one day, like that you're beautiful. And I'm like, oh my God, I do see that in myself now. Like, I wish I didn't end the video like that.
Right.
But, you know, I had so many people like just DMing me on Instagram and TikTok, going to my website and emailing me from my website. Like, your TikTok and like, I just want you to know that hopefully one day you'll find a man to love you. Like, what? So, yes, was a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah, but it was a joke.
But it was like, it wasn't, I was like, I did not expect it to blow up like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think now it's kind of capped at like 5.5 million views now.
That's so many.
I know. I've never seen 1 million in anything in my entire life. And I don't know if I ever will again, but
like, that's amazing.
Like it was really cool.
I'm going to follow you on TikTok now.
Yes, please do. My TikTok is @breakfastattiffany. Very cute. Very nice.
That's so cute.
It's very cute. I have like just under 60,000 followers now, and it's really cool. It's really fun. I mostly talk about like men and like dating on there because it's so relatable. It's like so relatable, but it's not like fun things. It's like, oh, this guy did that.
Oh yeah,
stupid things that.
Do you know about the podcast Swipe Fat?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. They live here in Chicago.
Yeah,
I've never seen them or met them, but like, low-key, I'm dying to meet them.
Oh my God, me too. We should all get on a podcast together.
Could you imagine? Oh my God, we have to send this to them. We need to.
Okay, that, yes, let's do it.
Okay, we're doing it. Awesome.
Because they're on a reality show, and I really want to have an episode where we specifically discuss fatness in reality TV.
Really? Oh my God, yeah. I didn't know that.
They're going to be on a reality dating show.
Oh my God.
If you follow them on Instagram or TikTok, they've been posting about that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I think that's my dream. I want them to come on this podcast and discuss the lack of fat representation in dating and reality shows.
That is so smart. I'm obsessed with them.
Mm-hmm. We have very much digressed, so I'm going to bring it back.
Let's bring it back.
And so one of the last questions we're going to talk about is Cast Me Cowards. That's our next segment.
Hell yeah.
And with that, you're going to tell me one role that you want to play that you would not, you know, traditionally be cast in as a fat person.
Yes. Okay. As a fat black person, I would never, ever be cast. I would never be cast as Marion the Librarian. She's Irish.
Yeah.
She's Irish. And like, yeah, I don't think I would ever play that role. But I mean, like I said, love to play it. Maybe one day. But I love her.
I hope so. I want that for you.
Fingers crossed. Either her or like Joanna in Sweeney Todd.
Oh yes. My gosh, that would be lovely. She's such a badass, too.
I know. I love her. I feel like that one's not super out of reach. Like, just throw a blonde wig on me. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
But, like, the whole Irish thing, like, with Marion, like, I feel like that's kind of impossible to overlook, you know?
I don't know. I mean, can we really not believe that there are black Irish people?
Like, yeah,
people,
that's true.
Also, like,
that's true.
What if, you know, your dad was from Ireland or
right,
something like that?
That's true.
And
that's
your mom
true.
Wasn't. Or
right. Like, I was in an Irish show. I was in A Man of No Importance. And
oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I was in the show. So maybe, yeah, maybe you're right. You know, suspend your disbelief, people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we could do that.
Okay, so last question. What are you doing or what can other people do to combat fat phobia in the arts?
I am not letting it define me. And I'm embracing it. I'm embracing being a bigger person, but I'm not letting it be me, you know?
Yes.
I'm not Tiffany, the fat girl. I'm just Tiffany who happens to be big, you know? And like,
there you go.
I can play any role that I want to. I like having that knowledge and like having that kind of outlook on it is what really, really helped me. Cause for a long time I did let it define me and I didn't want to.
Oh, same.
But because I let other people get into my head, especially my educators, especially the people in higher power that were telling me all these things, like, it took a lot. It took a lot for me to really find it in myself and be like, no, I am more than that. I am more than that. And I can do anything that I set my mind to. And like that, you know, that's just a general thing for everything. But like, for us specifically, it's like we really, really have to be steadfast in that because there's just so many people trying to tear us down, you know? And so, yeah, I guess my advice to other fat people would be like, don't let it define you and be yourself and people will fall in love with you for being yourself. You don't have to try and fit any sort of standard. You don't have to try and fit like what people think you should be.
Yeah.
You know, just being yourself and going for what you want and just like everybody else is, you know, just seeing yourself as everybody else sees themselves. Like that's really it. It's as simple as that. I'm sure there's more intricacies to it, but like for me, it's just kind of as simple as that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything particular that helped you to get to that point?
I don't really know. Therapy?
Word.
Therapy.
I just felt this chair break a little bit more.
Oh, no. I'm
got so excited about therapy. No, it's okay. It's okay.
Okay. No, it's all right. Yeah, I guess therapy and like, but it wasn't, you know, I don't chalk it all up just to therapy. It was a lot of self-work too. A lot of inner reflection and a lot of like, a lot of manifestation, as silly as that sounds, just kind of like putting it out into the universe and really believing in it. And like, if you set your mind to something, like, don't shy away from it.
Yeah.
And I did that for a very long time. I shied away from everything, but just going for it. And like, seeing those breakdowns that are like, oh, looking for a slim, fit, like attractive woman. Go for that because you're attractive.
I'm like, this is an act of rebellion against the system. Submit.
Like I've gotten called back for things that I'm so like not even not right for, but like we keep saying all the time, not traditional, you know?
Right. We really have to find a better word for that.
We do. We do. I don't know what.
If anyone listening has any ideas, like, email them to me.
Yes, let us know, because we want to know. We want to know what we can say that's, like, not revolving around tradition, you know?
Yeah.
Tradition is a gross thing, whatever. But yeah, I'd say, like, just
and now
going
I'm thinking about Fiddler on the Roof. So
tradition, tradition. Yes. Oh no.
Is Tevye a good fat representation? Stay tuned on a future episode.
Tevye. Oh, big belly guy, love him. You know, we need to get a Tevye on here on Sway.
Oh my God! If you played Tevye. Contact morethantracyturnblad@gmail.com as soon as possible.
We're going to change it to More Than Tevye.
All right. So before we finish up, is there anything that you have to plug? Anything you want to leave us with? And where can people find you on social media, etc.?
Yeah, for sure. You can follow me. Follow me on Instagram at Tiffany T. Taylor. Follow me on TikTok, Breakfast at Tiffany. And then you can also go to my website, TiffanyTTaylor.com, and see what I'm up to there. Check out my media and see my resume. Contact me if you want. Let me
Hell
know.
Yeah.
Let me know. Yeah, that's all. That's good.
Maybe don't tell her to be more confident, though.
Yes. Don't reach out to me about that one TikTok, please.
She knows.
I know. Believe me. Thank you, though.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Tiffany. This was so much fun. I love how silly we got.
I know. Thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun.
Of course. Anytime. We're going to get you back on here with the Swipe Fat Gals.
Yes. Oh, my God. I'm dreaming of the day. I'm so excited.
We'll stay in touch.
Amazing.
Yay. All right. Well, thank you if you listened, and you're the best.
Thank you, guys. Thank you
and
for listening.
Have a great rest of everyone's day, night, week, month, etc.
Au revoir.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to More Than Tracy Turnblad. If you liked it, hit subscribe and leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts. That would be awesome. Also, follow us on social media. Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, all at More Than Tracy T. And just tell your friends. Word of mouth is great, too. You can find more information at morethantracyturnblad.com.